shot him down. That's what they think happened at the colony, Finn said. The doctor's record shows that a hunting party got bit by these things, went back to the colony, and started shooting up the place. Then the creatures came in, took the dead, and killed off the survivors. King was bit too, but Captain Abernathy had him isolated until they could make an anti-venom, Hansen said. From your blood, Hester said. You were unconscious, so you couldn't go crazy. That gave your body time to metabolize and neutralize the venom. He was lucky you survived, Duval said. No, Dahl said, and lifted his arm to point at himself. Lucky he needed me. Chapter 8. What are these? Dahl asked from his bed, taking one of the button-like objects that Finn held in his hand. Our way to sneak up on Jenkins, Finn said, passing out the rest. They're delivery cart ID transponders. I pried them off disabled carts in the refuse hold. The cargo tunnel doors register each time they're opened and closed and look for identification. If you're a crew member, your phone IDs you. If you're a cart, one of these do. Why not just leave our phones behind and have no ID? Hansen asked, holding his button up to the light. Because then there's an unexplained door opening, Finn said. If this Jenkins is as paranoid and careful as Andy here thinks he is, that's not going to escape his notice. So, we leave our phones behind, take one of these, and go on after him, Dahl said. That's the plan I came up with, Finn said, unless you have a better one. I just spent 2 weeks doing nothing but healing, Dahl said. This works for me. So, when do we find this guy? Duval asked. If he's tracking the captain and the senior officers, then he's going to be active when they are, Dahl said. That means first shift. If we go in right after the start of third shift, we have a chance to catch him while he's still asleep. So he's going to wake up with five people hovering over him and staring, Hester said. That's not going to make him any more paranoid than he already is. He might not be asleep, and if he catches sight of us, he might try to run, Dahl said. If just one of us goes, he might get past us. He's less likely to get past five of us, each coming in from a different corridor. Everybody be ready to take down a Yeti, Finn said. This guy is big and hairy. Besides that, whatever the hell is happening on this ship, I think we all want to know about it sooner than later, Dahl said. So, right after third shift, Duval said. Tonight? Not tonight, Dahl said. Give me a day or two to get used to walking again. He stretched and winced. When do you get off medical leave? Hansen asked, watching his movements. Last day today, Dahl said. They're going to do a final checkup after you all leave. I'm all healed, just stiff from lying around on my ass, he said. A couple of days, I'll be ready to go. The only things I have to do between now and then is get discharged from here and go by the xenobiology lab to find out why neither of my superior officers has bothered to come see me since I've been in sickbay. It might have something to do with two of your colleagues getting eaten, Hester said. That's just a guess. I don't doubt that, Dahl said. But I need to find out what else it is, too. Don't bother, Lieutenant Collins said as Dahl walked through the door of the xenobiology lab. You don't work in this lab anymore. I've had you transferred. Dahl paused and looked around. Collins was in front of him, antagonistic. Trin, at a workstation behind her, was resolutely focused on whatever was on his work tablet. From other workstations, two new faces gawked openly at him. The new Cassaway and Mbakey? Dahl asked, turning his attention back to Collins. Jake and Fiona aren't replaceable, Collins said. No, just expendable, Dahl said, at least when it came down to them being on an away team. He motioned with his head to the new crew members. Told them yet about King or the captain? Have you explained your sudden absences when one of them shows up? Hauled out the box yet, Lieutenant? Collins was visibly making an effort to control herself. None of that is your concern, Ensign, she said, finally. You're not part of this lab anymore. Ensign D, the junior science officer on the bridge, fell to her death a week ago on an away mission. I recommended you to King as her replacement. He agreed. You start tomorrow. Technically, it's a promotion. Congratulations. Someone once told me to stay off the bridge, Dahl said, and then nodded over at Trin. Two people did, actually. But one of them was more forceful about it. Nonsense, Collins said. The bridge is the perfect place for someone like you. You'll be in contact with senior officers on a daily basis. They'll get to know you very well, and there will be lots of opportunities for adventure. You'll be going on away missions weekly, sometimes even more often than that. She smiled thinly. Well, Dahl said. You putting me in for this promotion certainly shows what you think of me, Lieutenant.
Think nothing of it, Collins said. It's no more than you deserve.
And now I think you better run along, Ensign. You'll need your rest for your first day on the bridge.
Dahl straightened and saluted crisply. Collins turned away without acknowledgement.
Dahl turned and headed for the door, but then changed his mind and stalked up to the new crew.
How long have you been here? He asked the closest one of them.
She looked at the other crewman and then back at Dahl.
4 days, she said. We transferred in from the Honsu.
No away teams yet, Dahl said.
No, sir, she said.
Dahl nodded. A piece of advice for you, he pointed back at Collins and Trin. When they suddenly go for coffee, that's a very good time for you to do an inventory on the storage room. Both of you. I don't think those two were going to bother to tell you that. I don't think they're going to bother to tell that to anyone who works in this lab ever again. So I'm telling you. Watch them. Don't let them sell you out.
Dahl turned and walked out, leaving two very confused crewmen and two very pissed off officers.
Slow down, Andy, Duval said, moving faster herself to keep up. You just got out of sick bay.
Dahl snorted and stomped down the corridor. Duval came up even to him.
You think she got you assigned to the bridge to get back at you for your lap mates? She said.
No, Dahl said. She got me assigned to the bridge because when she had to assign Jake and Fiona, it rubbed her face in it.
In it? Duval said.
In what?
Dahl glanced at Duval.
That she's afraid, he said.
Everyone on this entire ship is afraid, Maya.
They hide, and they disappear, and they find ways not to think about how much time they spend hiding. And then comes the moment when they can't hide, and they have to face themselves. And they hate that.
That's why Collins assigned me to the bridge, because otherwise, every time she looked at me, she'd be reminded that she's a coward. He sped up again.
Where are you going? Duval asked.
Leave me alone, Maya, Dahl said.
Duval stopped in her tracks. Dahl left her behind. In fact, Dahl had no idea where he was going. He was burning off frustration and anger, and being on the move was the closest thing the jam-packed Intrepid offered to being alone. This was why, when the crew presence finally thinned, and Dahl felt the fatigue his disused muscles had been trying to alert him about, he was surprised to find himself outside the cargo tunnel door closest to Jenkins' secret hideaway. He stood outside the door for a long minute, remembering the plan to sneak up on Jenkins as a team and find out what he knew. Fuck it, he said. He smacked the access panel to open the corridor door. A Yeti was standing directly on the other side. It grabbed him and pulled him into the corridor. Dahl yelled in surprise, but was too weak to resist. He stumbled into the corridor. The Yeti, whom Dahl now recognized as Jenkins, closed the door behind them. Stop yelling, Jenkins said, and stuck a finger in his ear, twisting it. Jesus, that's annoying. Dahl looked at the closed door and then back at Jenkins.
How did you do that? He asked.
How did you know?
Because I am a student of the human condition, Jenkins said, and as humans go, you're pretty predictable. And because I have you under constant surveillance through your phone, you dumbass.
So you know about your overly complicated plan to sneak up on me?
Yes, Jenkins said.
Your friend Finn gets partial credit for the cart ID thing. What he doesn't know is that when decommissioned cart IDs get scanned, I get an immediate alert. He's not the first person to think of that to access these corridors, and you're not the first person to try to find me.
I'm not, Dahl said.
Jenkins snapped his fingers as if to focus Dahl's attention.
What did I just say? Redundant conversation isn't going to do us any good.
Sorry, Dahl said. Let me try again. Others have tried to find you and failed.
That's right, Jenkins said. I don't want to be found, and those who use my services don't want me to be found either. Between us, we manage to avoid anyone I don't want to see.
So you want to see me? Dahl said carefully. It's more accurate to say you want to see me, and I'm willing to let myself be seen by you, Jenkins said.
Why me? Dahl asked.
You just got assigned to the bridge, Jenkins said.
I did, Dahl said. And I remember you telling me very specifically to stay off the bridge.
And that's why you came looking for me, Jenkins said, even though it would ruin the plan you made with your friends.
Yes, Dahl said.
Why? Jenkins asked.
I don't know, Dahl said. I wasn't thinking clearly.
Wrong, Jenkins said. You were thinking clearly, but you weren't thinking consciously.
Now, think about it consciously and tell me why. But hurry, I'm feeling exposed here.
Because you know why, Dahl said. Everyone else in the Intrepid knows something's fucked up about this ship. They've got their ways to avoid getting sucked into it. But they don't know why. You do.
Maybe I do, Jenkins said. But why would it matter?
Because if you don't know why something is the way it is, then you don't know anything about it at all, Dahl said. All the tricks and superstitions aren't going to do a damn bit of good if you don't know the reason for them. The conditions could change, and then you're screwed.
That's all very blandly logical, Jenkins said. It doesn't explain why you decided to track me down now.
Because someone's actively trying to kill me now, Dahl said. Collins got me assigned to the bridge because she's decided she wants me dead.
Yes, death by away team. Very effective on this ship, Jenkins said.
I'm on the bridge tomorrow, Dahl said. After that, it's not a matter of if I get killed, it's when. I'm out of time. I need to know now.
So you can avoid dying, Jenkins said.
It would be nice, Dahl said.
Collins wants to avoid death and you just called her a coward for it, Jenkins said.
That's not why she's a coward, Dahl said.
No, I suppose not, Jenkins said. If I can understand why, maybe I can keep myself from getting killed. And maybe I can keep others from being killed too, Dahl said. I have people I care about here. I'd like to see them live.
Well then, Jenkins said. Let me ask you one more question, Dahl.
What if I tell you what I think, and it sounds insane to you?
Is that what happened? Dahl asked.
Collins and Trin, you worked for them. You told them you had a theory. They heard it and they didn't believe it.
Jenkins chuckled at that. I said insane, not unbelievable, he said. And I think Collins, for one, believes it just fine.
How do you know? Dahl asked.
Because it's what's made her a coward, Jenkins said. Then looked at Dahl appraisingly.
But maybe not you.
No, maybe not at all. And maybe not your friends.
So gather them up, Ensign Dahl. Meet me in my hidey hole tonight, same time you were going to invade. I'll see you then.
He turned to go.
May I ask you a question? Dahl asked.
You mean besides that one? Jenkins asked.
Two, actually, Dahl said.
Cassaway said they got on that away mission because you didn't tell them Keen was coming to see them. He said it was retaliation for me trying to find out about you. Was it?
No, Jenkins said. I didn't tell them Keen was on the way because at the time I was taking a dump. I can't watch everything all the time. What's your second question?
You told me to stay off the bridge, Dahl said. Me and Finn. Why did you do that?
Well, I told your friend Finn because he just happened to be there, and I didn't think it would hurt, even if he's a bit of an asshole, Jenkins said. But as for you, well, let's just say I have a special interest in the xenobiology lab. Call it a sentimental attachment. And let's also just say I guessed that your response to what happens here on the Intrepid would go beyond the usual fear response. So I figured offering you a warning and a piece of advice in person couldn't hurt.
Jenkins moved his hand as if to say, see?
And look where we are now. At the very least, you're still alive. So far.
He reached over to the access panel and slapped open the door to return Dahl to the Intrepid. Then he walked off.
Chapter 9. Come on, Jenkins said, and pounded on the display table.
Above the table, a holographic image flickered and then died. Jenkins pounded the table again. Dahl looked over to Duvall, who with Hansen, Finn, and Hester was jammed into Jenkins' tiny living space. She rolled her eyes.
Sorry, Jenkins muttered, ostensibly to the five crewmen jammed into his living space, but mostly to himself.
I get equipment when everyone else throws it out. The carts bring it to me. Then I have to repair it. It's a little buggy sometimes.
It's all right, Dahl said. His eyes took a visual tour of his surroundings. Along with Jenkins and the five of them, the delivery cart storage area was jammed with Jenkins' possessions. The large holographic table, situated between him and the five crew members. A thin cot. A small wardrobe with boxes of hygienic wash wipes piled on it. A pallet of Universal Union away team rations, and a portable toilet. Dahl wondered how the toilet was emptied and serviced. He wasn't sure that he really wanted to know.
Is this going to start anytime soon? Asked Hester. I thought we'd be done by now, and I kind of have to pee.
Jenkins motioned to the toilet. Be my guest, he said.
I'd rather not, Hester said.
You can just tell us what you want us to know, Dahl suggested. We don't have to do a slideshow presentation.
Oh, but you do, Jenkins said. If I just tell you, it'll sound crazy. Graphs and images make it, well, less crazy, anyway.
Swell, Finn said, and looked over at Dahl, as if to say, thanks for getting us into this. Dahl shrugged.
Another table pound by Jenkins, and the holographic image stabilized.
Ha! Jenkins said. Okay, I'm ready.
Thank God, Hester said.
Jenkins fiddled his hands over the table, accessing a display of flat images parallel to the top of the display table. He found one he wanted and flipped it up into the view of the rest of them.
This is the Intrepid, Jenkins said, motioning to the rotating graphic that now hovered atop the holographic table. The flagship of the Universal Union Space Fleet, and one of the fleet's largest ships. But for all that, one of just thousands of ships in the fleet. For the first 9 years of its existence, aside from being appointed the flagship, there was nothing particularly special about it, from a statistical point of view. The Intrepid shrank and was replaced by a graph showing two closely conforming lines plotted across time, one representing the ship, the other representing the fleet as a whole. It had a general mission of exploration, and from time to time engaged in military actions, and in both scenarios suffered crew losses consistent with W average, if slightly lower, because the W sees the flagship as a symbol and generally gave it less strenuous missions. But then, 5 years ago, this. The graph scrolled to include the last 5 years. The Intrepid's line spiked violently and then plateaued at a substantially higher level than the rest of the fleet.
Whoa, Hansen said. Whoa is right, Jenkins said.
What happened? Dahl asked.
Captain Abernathy is what happened, Duval said. He took command of the Intrepid 5 years ago.
Close, but wrong, Jenkins said, and waved his hands over the table, rooting through visual elements to find the one he wanted. Abernathy did take command of the Intrepid 5 years ago. Before that, he was captain of the Griffin for 4 years, where he developed a reputation of being an unconventional and risk-taking but effective leader.
Risk-taking could be a euphemism for getting crew killed, Hester said.
Could be, but isn't, Jenkins said, and threw an image of a battlecruiser into the view.
Here's the Griffin, he said. A graph scrolled out behind it, like the one that scrolled out behind the Intrepid earlier.
And, as you can see, despite Abernathy's risk-taking reputation, the crew fatality rate is on average no worse than any other ship in the line. That's impressive, considering the Griffin is a battlecruiser, a W warship. It's not until Abernathy gets to the Intrepid that fatalities for crew under his command spike so massively.
Maybe he's gone nuts, Finn said. His psychological reviews for the last 5 years are clean, Jenkins said.
How do you know? Finn stopped and held up his hand. You know, never mind. Dumb question.
He's not insane, and he's not purposefully putting his crew at risk, is what you're saying, Dahl said.
But I remember Lieutenant Collins saying to me that when people complained about the high crew death rate on the Intrepid, they were told that as the flagship, it engaged in riskier missions. He pointed at the screen. You're telling us that it's not true.
It's true that away missions result in higher deaths now, Jenkins said, but it's not because the missions themselves are inherently more risky.
He fiddled and threw several ship images up on the screen.
These are some of our combat and infiltration ships, he said. They routinely take on high-risk missions. Here are their average crew fatalities over time.
Graphs spewed out behind their images.
You can see their fatalities are higher than the W baseline, but, Jenkins dragged over the image of the Intrepid, their crew fatalities are still substantially lower than the Intrepid's, whose missions are generally classified as having far less risk.
So why do people keep dying? Duval asked.
The missions themselves are generally not risky, Jenkins said. It's just that something always goes wrong on them.
So it's a competence issue, Dahl said.
Jenkins tossed up a scrolling image featuring the Intrepid's officers and section heads and their various citations and awards.
This is the flagship of the W, he said. You don't get to be on it if you're an incompetent.
Then it's bad luck, Finn said. The Intrepid has the worst karma in the known universe. That second part might be true, Jenkins said, but I don't think luck has anything to do with it.
Dahl blinked and remembered saying the same thing after he dragged Kerensky into the shuttle.
There's something going on with the officers here, he said.
Five of them, yes, Jenkins said. Abernathy, King, Kerensky, West, and Hartnell. Statistically speaking, there's something highly aberrant about them. When they're on an away mission, the chance of the mission experiencing a critical failure increases. When two or more of them are on the same away mission, the chance of a critical failure increases exponentially. If three or more are on the mission, it's almost certain someone is going to die.
But never any of them, Hansen said.
That's right, Jenkins said. Sure, Kerensky gets the shit kicked out of him on a regular basis. Even the other four are occasionally knocked around. But death? Not for them. Never for them.
And none of this is normal, Dahl prompted.
Of course not, Jenkins said. He flipped up pictures of the five officers with graphs behind them. Each of them has experienced exponentially higher fatality rates on away missions than any other officers in the same positions on other ships. That's across the entire fleet and across the entire existence of the fleet, back to the formation of the W nearly 200 years ago. You have to go back to the Blue Water fleets for the same types of fatalities, and even the officers themselves didn't escape mortality. Captains and senior officers were dropping dead all the time.
That's what scurvy and plague will do, Hester said.
It's not just scurvy, Jenkins said, and waved at the officers' pictures. Officers die today, too, you know. Having rank changes mortality patterns somewhat, but doesn't eliminate them. Statistically speaking, all five of these guys should be dead two or three times over. Maybe one or two of them would have survived all the experiences they've had so far. But all five of them? The odds are better that one of them would get struck by lightning.
Which they would survive, Finn said.
But not the crewman next to him, Duval said.
Now you're getting it, Jenkins said.
So what you're saying is all this is impossible, Dahl said.
Jenkins shook his head. Nothing's impossible, he said. But some things are pretty damned unlikely. This is one of them.
How unlikely? Dahl asked. In all my research, there's only one spaceship I've found that has even remotely the same sort of statistical patterns for away missions, Jenkins said. He rummaged through the graphic elements again and then threw one onto the screen. They all stared at it. Duval frowned.
I don't recognize this ship, she said. And I thought I knew every type of ship we had. Is this a W ship?
Not exactly, Jenkins said. It's from the United Federation of Planets.
Duval blinked and focused her attention back at Jenkins.
Who are they? She asked.
They don't exist, Jenkins said, and pointed back at the ship. And neither does this.
This is the Starship Enterprise. It's fictional. It was on a science fictional drama series.
And so are we.
Okay, Finn said after a moment. I don't know about anyone else here, but I'm ready to label this guy officially completely fucking insane.
Jenkins looked over to Dahl. I told you it would sound insane, he said.
He waved at the display. But here are the stats. The stats show that there's something screwed up with this ship, Finn said. It doesn't suggest we're the stars in a fucked up science fiction show.
I never said you were the stars, Jenkins said.
He pointed at the floating images of Abernathy, King, Kerensky, West, and Hartnell.
They're the stars. You're extras.
Perfect, Finn said and stood up. Thank you so much for wasting my time. I'm going to get some sleep now.
Wait, Dahl said.
Wait? Seriously, Andy? Finn said. I know you've been obsessed with this for a little while now, but there's being on the edge, and then there's going all the way over the edge. And our hairy friend here is so far over the edge that the edge doesn't even know him anymore.
You know how I hate to agree with Finn, Hester said.
But I do. This isn't right. It's not even wrong.
Dahl looked at Duval.
I'm voting for nuts too, Andy, she said. Sorry.
Jimmy? Dahl asked, looking at Hansen.
Well, he's definitely nuts, Hansen said.
but he thinks he's telling the truth. Of course he does! That's why he's nuts! Finn said. That's not what I mean, Hansen said. When you're nuts, your reasoning is consistent with your own internal logic, but it's internal logic, which doesn't make any sort of sense outside your own head. He pointed at Jenkins. His logic is external and reasonable enough.
Except the part where we're all fictional, Finn sneered.
I never said that, Jenkins said.
Ah! Finn said and pointed to the Enterprise. Fictional! You unmitigated asshole!
It's fictional, Jenkins said. You're real, but a fictional television show intrudes on our reality and warps it.
Wait, Finn said, waving his hands in disbelief. Television?
Are you fucking kidding me? There hasn't been television in hundreds of years!
Television got its start in 1928, Jenkins said. The last use of the medium for entertainment purposes was in 2105. Sometime between those two dates, there's a television series following the adventures of the crew of the Intrepid.
I really want to know what you're smoking, Finn said, because whatever it is, I'm betting I can make a hell of a profit on it.
Jenkins looked back at Dahl again. I can't work like this, he said.
Everyone shut up for a minute, Dahl said.
Finn and Jenkins calmed themselves. Look, I agree it sounds crazy. Even he admits it sounds crazy. Dahl pointed at Jenkins. But think about what we've seen go on in this ship. Think of how people act here. What's messed up here isn't that this guy thinks we're on a television show. What's messed up here is that as far as I can tell, at this point, it's the most rational explanation for what's going on. Tell me that I'm wrong.
Dahl looked around at his friends. Everyone was silent. Finn looked like he was barely holding his tongue.
Right, Dahl said. So at least let's hear the rest of what he has to say. Maybe it gets more nuts from here. Maybe it starts to make more sense. Either way, it's better than we have now, which is nothing.
Fine, Finn said, finally. But you owe us all hand jobs. He sat back down.
Hand jobs? Jenkins asked Dahl.
Long story, Dahl said.
Well, anyway, Jenkins said. You're right about one thing. It's messed up that the most rational explanation for what goes on in this ship is that a television show intrudes on our reality and warps it. But that's not the worst thing about it.
Jesus Christ, Finn said. If that's not the worst thing, what is?
That as far as I can tell, Jenkins said, it's not actually a very good show.
Chapter 10
Red alert, said Captain Abernathy as the Calendrian rebel ship fired its torpedoes at the Intrepid. Evasive maneuvers, now!
Dahl, standing at his science post on the bridge, positioned his feet for stability as the ship yawed widely, moving its bulk to avoid the nimble guided projectiles headed for it.
You'll notice that the Intrepid's inertial dampeners don't work as well in crisis situations, Dahl remembered Jenkins telling them. The ship could do hairpin turns and loop-de-loops any other time and you'd never notice, but whenever there's a dramatic event, there goes your footing.
They're still coming right at us, yelled Ensign Jacobs at the weapon station, tracking the torpedoes. Abernathy pounded the button on his chair that opened a broadcast channel. All hands, brace for impact!
Dahl and everyone else on the bridge grabbed onto their stations and braced themselves. This would be a good time for a restraint system, Dahl thought.
There was a far crump as the torpedoes hit the Intrepid. The bridge deck swayed from the impact.
Damage report, barked Abernathy.
Deck 6 through 12 will almost always sustain damages during an attack, Jenkins had said. It's because these are the decks the show has sets for. They can cut away from the bridge for shots of explosions and crew being flung backward.
Deck 6, 7, and 9 have sustained heavy damages, King said. Decks 8 and 10 have moderate damage. More torpedoes, cried Jacobs. Four of them! Countermeasures, yelled Abernathy. Fire!
Why didn't you use countermeasures in the first place, Dahl thought.
In his head, Jenkins answered, every battle is designed for maximum drama, he said. This is what happens when the narrative takes over. Things quit making sense. The laws of physics take a coffee break.
people stop thinking logically and start thinking dramatically. The narrative, Jenkins' term for when the television show crept into their lives, swept away rationality and physical laws and made people know, do, and say things they wouldn't otherwise. "You've had it happen to you already," Jenkins had said. "A fact you didn't know before just pops into your head. You make a decision or take an action you wouldn't otherwise make. It's like an irresistible impulse, because it is an irresistible impulse. Your will isn't your own. You're just a pawn for a writer to move around." On the view screen, three orange blossoms burned brightly as the Intrepid's countermeasures took out torpedoes. Three, not four, Dahl thought, because having one get through will be more dramatic. "One's still heading our way," Jacobs said. "It's going to hit!" There was a violent bang as the torpedo smacked against the hull several decks below the bridge. Jacobs screamed as his weapon station exploded in a shower of sparks, flinging him backward to the deck of the bridge. "Something will explode on the bridge," Jenkins said. "That's where the camera spends nearly all its time. There has to be damage there, whether it makes sense or not."
"Reroute weapons control," yelled Abernathy.
"Rerouted," said Kerensky. "I have them."
"Fire," Abernathy said. "Full spread."
Kerensky smashed his fingers into the buttons of his station. The view screen lit up as pulse beams and neutrino missiles blasted toward the Calendrian rebel, exploding in a constellation of impacts seconds later.
"Direct hits," Kerensky said, looking at his station for information.
"It looks like we cracked their engine core, Captain. We've got about a minute before she blows."
"Get us out of here, Kerensky," Abernathy said, and then turned to King. "Additional damages?"
"Deck 12, heavily damaged," King said.
The door to the bridge opened, and Chief Engineer West came through.
"And our engines are banged up pretty good," he said,
as though he would have been able to hear Abernathy and King's conversation through a door while red alert sirens were blaring.
"We're lucky we didn't crack our own core, Captain."
"How long until it's repaired?"
Abernathy asked. "Just long enough to introduce a plot complication," Dahl thought.
10 hours would be pushing it," West said.
"Damn it," Abernathy said, pounding his chair again. "We're supposed to be escorting the Calendrian Pontifex's ship to the peace talks by then."
"Clearly, there are those among the rebels still opposed to the talks," King said, looking toward the view screen. In it, the rebel ship blew up impressively.
"Yes, clearly," Abernathy said. "But they were the ones who asked for the talks to begin with. Why jeopardize them now? And why attack us?"
He looked off, grimly. Every once in a while, Abernathy or one of the other officers will say something dramatic or rhetorical or leading, and then he and everyone else will be quiet for a few seconds, Jenkins told them. That's a lead out to a commercial break. When that happens, the narrative goes away. Watch what they do next. After several seconds, Abernathy blinked, relaxed his posture, and looked at West.
"Well, you should probably have your people start fixing those engines, then." His voice was notably less tense and drama-filled.
"Right," West said, and went right back out of the door. As he did so, he looked around, as if wondering why he felt it necessary to come all the way to the bridge to deliver a piece of information he could have easily offered by phone. Abernathy turned to King.
"And let's get repair crews to those damaged decks."
"Will do," King said.
"And while you're at it, get someone up here to repair the weapon station," Abernathy said, "and see if we can't find some power spike dampeners or something. There's not a damn reason why everything on the bridge has to go up in sparks any time we have a battle."
Dahl made a small choking sound at this.
"Is there a problem, Ensign?" Abernathy said, seeing Dahl for what seemed like the first time in all of this.
"No, sir," Dahl said. "Sorry, sir. A little post-combat nervousness."
"You're Dill," Abernathy said, "from xenobiology."
"Dahl, sir," Dahl said. "That was my former posting, yes."
"First day on the bridge, then," Abernathy said.
"It is," Dahl said.
"Well, don't worry, it's not always like this," Abernathy said.
"Sometimes it's worse."
"Yes, sir," Dahl said.
"Okay," Abernathy said, and then nodded at the prone figure of Jacobs, who was now moaning softly.
"Why don't you make yourself useful and take Jackson here to sickbay? He looks like he could use it."
"Right away, sir,"
Dahl said, and moved to help Jacobs.
"How is he?" Abernathy asked, as Dahl lifted him.
"Banged up," Dahl said, "but I think he'll live."
"Well, good," Abernathy said. "That's more than I can say for the last weapons specialist, or the one before that."
Sometimes, Dill, I wonder what the hell is going on with this ship. It's like it has a goddamned curse.
It doesn't prove anything, Finn said after Dahl recounted the events of the attack. The five of them were huddled around a table in the crew lounge with their drinks.
How much more proof do you want? Dahl asked. It was like going down a checklist. Wonky inertial dampeners? Check. Exploding bridge stations? Check. Damage to deck 6 through 12? Check. Meaningful pause before dropping to commercial? Check.
No one died, Hansen pointed out. Nobody had to die, Dahl said. I think this battle is just an opener. It's what you have before the first commercial break. It's the setup for whatever's supposed to happen next.
Like what? Duval asked.
I don't know, Dahl said. I'm not writing this thing.
Jenkins would know, Hester said. He's got that collection of episodes.
Dahl nodded. Jenkins had splayed out a timeline of the Intrepid that featured glowing hash marks at near-regular intervals. Those are where the narrative intrudes, he said, zooming into one of the hash marks, which in detail branched out like a root structure. It comes and goes, you can see. Each of these smaller events is a scene. They all tie into a narrative arc. Jenkins zoomed out. 6 years, 24 major events a year on average, plus a couple minor ones. I think those are tie-in novels.
Not you now, Finn complained to Hester, breaking Dahl's reverie. It's bad enough Andy is all wrapped up in this. Now you're going over to the crazy side, too?
Finn, if the shoe fits, I'm going to call it a shoe, all right? Hester said.
I don't believe his conclusions, but his knowledge of the details is pretty damn impressive. This last engagement went down like Jenkins said it would. He called the thing right down to the exploding bridge station. Now, maybe we're not actually being written, and maybe Jenkins is off his medication, but I bet he's got a good guess where this adventure with that rebel ship takes us.
So you're going to go running to him every time something happens to find out what you should do next? Finn asked.
If you really want to follow a cult leader, there are better ones than a guy who hasn't eaten anything but away rations for 4 years and shits in a portable potty.
How do you explain it, then? Hester asked Finn.
I don't, Finn said. Look, this is a weird damn ship. We all agree on that. But what you're trying to do is impose causality on random events, just like everyone else here has been doing.
The suspension of the laws of physics isn't a random event, Finn, Hester said.
And you're a physicist now, Finn countered and looked around. People, we're on a goddamn spaceship. Can any of us really explain how the thing works? We encounter all types of alien life on planets we've just discovered. Should we be surprised we don't understand it? We're part of a civilization that spans light years. It's inherently weird if you give it any thought. It's all inherently unlikely.
You didn't say any of this when we met with Jenkins, Dahl said.
I was going to, Finn said. But then you were all, let's hear what he has to say. And there was no point.
Dahl frowned, irritated. Look. I'm not disagreeing there's something off here, Finn said.
There is. We all know it. But maybe it's because this whole ship is on some sort of insanity feedback loop. It's been feeding on itself for years now.
In a situation like that, if you're looking for patterns to connect unlikely events, you're going to find them. It doesn't help there's someone like Jenkins who is crazy but just coherent enough to whip up an explanation that makes some sort of messed up sense in hindsight. Then he goes rogue and starts tracking the officers for the rest of the crew, which just feeds the insanity. And into this comes Andy, who is trained to believe this sort of mumbo jumbo.
What does that mean? Dahl said, stiffening.
It means you spent years in a seminary, neck deep in mysticism, Finn said. And not just run-of-the-mill human mysticism, but genuinely alien mysticism. You stretched your mind out there, my friend, just wide enough to fit Jenkins' nut-brained theory.
He put up his hands, sensing Dahl's irritation. I like you, Andy. Don't get me wrong. I think you're a good guy. But I think your history here is working against you. And I think, whether you know it or not, you're leading our pals here into genuinely bug shit territory.
Speaking of personal history, that's the thing that creeped me out most about Jenkins, Duval said.
That he knows about us? Asked Hansen. I mean, how much he knew about each of us, Duval said, and what he thought it meant. You're all extras, but you're glorified extras, Jenkins had told them. Your average extra exists just to get killed off, so he or she doesn't have a backstory. But each of you do, he pointed to each in turn. You were a novitiate to an alien religion. You're a scoundrel who's made enemies across the fleet. You're the son of one of the richest men in the universe. You left your last ship after having an altercation with your superior officer, and you're sleeping with Kerensky now. You're just pissed he told the rest of us that you were boinking Kerensky, Hester said, especially after you had already blown him off in front of us. Duval rolled her eyes. I have needs, she said. He's had 3 STDs in his recent history, Finn said. I had him get a new round of shots, trust me, Duval said, and then looked over at Dahl. And anyway, don't get on me for scratching an itch. None of you were exactly stepping up. Hey, I was in sickbay when you started with Kerensky, Dahl said. Don't blame me. Duval smirked at that. And it wasn't that part that bothered me anyway, she said. It was the other part. You're not just going to get killed off, Jenkins told them. It's not enough for a television audience just to kill off some poor random bastard every episode. Every once in a while, they have to make it seem like a real person is dying. So they take a smaller character, build them up long enough for the audience to care about them, and then snap them off. That's you guys, because you come with backstories. You're probably going to have an entire episode devoted to your death. More complete bullshit, Finn said. Easy for you to say, Hester said. I'm the only one of us without an interesting backstory. I've got nothing. The next away team I'm on, I'm fucking doomed. Finn pointed at Hester and looked at Dahl. See? This is what I'm talking about, right here. You've overwhelmed a weak and febrile mind. Dahl smiled at this. And you're the lone voice of sanity. Yes, Finn said. I want you to think about what it means when I am the person in a group who is making the case for reality. I'm the least responsible person I know. I resent having to be the voice of reason. I resent it a lot. Weak and febrile, Hester muttered. You were the one calling a shoe, Finn said. Duval's phone pinged, and she stepped away for a moment. When she returned, she was pale. All right, she said. That was altogether too damned coincidental for my tastes. Dahl frowned. What is it? That was Kerensky, she said. I'm wanted for a senior officer briefing. What for? Hansen asked. When the Intrepid was attacked by that rebel ship, our engines got knocked out. So they sent another ship to escort the Calendrian Pontifex's ship to the peace talks, Duval said. That ship just attacked the Pontifex's ship and crippled it. What ship is it? Dahl asked. The Nance, Duval said. The last ship I was stationed on. Chapter 11. Trust me, Andy, Finn said, walking with Dahl toward Duval's barracks. She doesn't want to talk to you. You don't know that, Dahl said. I do know that, Finn said. Yeah? Dahl asked. How? When I saw her just after she came out of her briefing, she said to me, If I see Andy, I swear to God I'm going to break his nose, Finn said. Dahl smiled. The two of them reached Duval's barracks and entered the room, which was empty except for Duval sitting on her bunk. Maya, Dahl began. Andy, Duval said, stood and punched Dahl in the face. Dahl collapsed to the deck, holding his nose. I told you, Finn said to Dahl on the deck. He looked over to Duval. I did tell him. I thought you were kidding, Dahl said from the deck. Surprise, Finn said. Dahl pulled his hand back from his face to see if there was any blood on it. There wasn't. What was that for? He asked Duval. It's for your conspiracy theories, Duval said. They're not my theories, Dahl said. They're Jenkins' theories. For Christ's sake, it doesn't matter who thought up the fucking things, Duval snapped. I'm in that goddamn meeting today, telling them what I know about the Nance, and all the time I'm doing that, I'm thinking, this is it. This is the episode when I die. And then I look over at Kerensky, and he's making cow eyes at me, like we're married instead of just screwing. And then I know I'm doomed, because if that son of a bitch has a crush on me, it makes it perfect if I get killed off, because then he can be sad at the end of the episode. It doesn't have to work that way, Maya, Dahl said, and started to get up. She pushed him back down.
Shut up, Andy, she said. Just shut up. You're not getting it. It doesn't matter if it's going to work that way. What matters is now I'm buying into your paranoia. Now some part of my brain is thinking about buying it on an away mission. It's thinking about it all the time. It's like waiting for the other shoe to drop, and you fucking did it to me. Thank you so very much.
Duval sat down on her bunk, pissed. I'm sorry, Dahl said after a minute.
Sorry, Duval said, and laughed a small laugh. Jesus, Andy.
What went on in the officer briefing? Finn asked.
I briefed them about the Nance and its crew, Duval said. The Calendrian rebels have a spy or turncoat in the crew, someone who could hack into the weapon systems and fire on the Pontifex's ship and then shut down communications. We've heard nothing from the Nance since the attack.
Why would they put a spy on the Nance? Finn asked. It was the Intrepid that was supposed to escort the Pontifex's ship.
They must have known the Nance was the backup ship for this mission, Duval said. And it's easier to sneak a spy on the Nance than on the flagship of the Universal Union. So they send a ship to attack us, knock us out of the mission, and then the Nance is in a perfect position to take a shot at the Pontifex's ship. And that's the other thing.
Duval pointed at Dahl.
Because when we're being told this in the briefing, I'm thinking, how far ahead would you have to plant a spy? How could they have known the Nance would be the backup ship for a mission that was just assigned a couple of days ago? How likely is that? And then I think, this episode needs to be better edited.
She looked down at Dahl.
And that's when I decided I was going to punch you in the head the next time I saw you.
Jenkins did say he didn't think the show was very good, Dahl said.
Duval cocked back her arm. Don't make me do it again, Andy, she said.
Is there an away team? Finn asked.
Yes, Duval said, and I'm on it. The Nance is silent and it isn't moving. So the Intrepid has been ordered to investigate the situation on the Nance and to defend the Pontifex's ship from any further attack.
I was stationed on the Nance, and I was a ground trooper, so that makes me the guide for the away team. And I'm likely to get everyone on the team killed now, since thanks to Andy, I'm convinced this is when it makes dramatic sense for me to get shot between the eyes.
When do we arrive? Finn asked.
About 2 hours, Duval said.
Why?
Finn fished in his pocket and pulled out a small blue oblong pill.
Here, take this.
Duval peered at it.
What is it?
It's a mood leveler made from the Orinx plant, Finn said. It's very mild.
I don't need a mood leveler, Duval said. I just need to smack Andy again.
You can do both, Finn said. Trust me, Maya, you're a wreck right now and you know it. And like you said, that's going to put your away team at risk.
And taking a drug won't, Duval said.
Not this one, Finn said.
Like I said, it's very mild. You'll hardly notice the effect. All you'll notice is that you'll unclench a little. Just enough to focus on your job and not on your state of mind. It won't affect anything else. You'll still be sharp and aware.
He held the pill closer to Duval. She peered at it again.
There's lint on it, she said.
Finn dusted the lint off.
There, he said.
All right, Duval said, taking the pill.
But if I start seeing talking lizards, I'm going to punch you.
Fair enough, Finn said. Should I get you some water?
I'm fine, Duval said, and dry swallowed.
Then she leaned over and smacked Dahl across the face with an open palm slap.
What was that one for? Dahl asked.
Finn said I could take the pill and slap you, Duval said, and then frowned. She looked up at Finn.
What was this pill made of?
The Orinx plant, Finn said.
And its effects are mild, Duval said.
Usually, Finn said.
Because I'll tell you what, I'm getting some pretty strong effects all of a sudden,
Duval said, and then slumped off her bunk. Dahl caught her before she collapsed onto the deck.
What did you do? Dahl asked Finn, struggling with Duval's unconscious body.
Quite obviously, I knocked her out, Finn said, walking over to assist Dahl.
I thought you said that pill was very mild, Dahl said.
I lied, Finn said, and took Duval's legs. The two of them maneuvered her back onto her bunk.
How long is she going to be out? Dahl asked.
A dose like that will knock out a good-sized man for about 8 hours, Finn said. So she'll probably be down for at least 10.
She'll miss her away team, Dahl said.
Yes, she will. That's the point, Finn said, and then nodded down at Duval. Andy, you've got Duval and our other friends so fucked up about this television thing that it's messing with their heads. If you want to go down that road, that's fine. I'm not going to stop you. But I want to make sure the rest of them see a counter-argument in action. By drugging Maya? Dahl said. That's the means to an end, Finn said. The end is making the point that even without Maya, the away team is going to go over to the Nance and do their job. Life goes on, even when Jenkins' narrative is supposed to apply. Once Maya, Jimmy, and Hester see that, maybe they'll stop freaking out. And who knows, maybe you'll come to your senses, too. Dahl nodded to Duval. She's still going to get in trouble for missing her mission, he said. That's a court-martial offense. I'm not sure she'll appreciate that. Finn smiled. I like how you think I didn't plan for that, he said. And just how did you plan for that? Dahl said. You're about to find out, Finn said, because you're part of it. Where's Maya? Kerensky asked.
Who?
Finn said innocently. Duval, Kerensky said somewhat impatiently. She's supposed to be on this away team. Oh, her, Finn said. She's been waylaid with Orinxian dropsy. She's out for a couple of days. Dahl and I here are replacing her on the team. Check your orders, sir. Kerensky looked at Finn appraisingly, then pulled out his phone and checked the away team order. After a moment, he grunted and motioned them toward the shuttle. Finn and Dahl got on. Dahl didn't know how Finn had forged the away team order and didn't feel the need to ask too deeply about it. Inside the shuttle were Captain Abernathy, Commander King, and an extraordinarily nervous-looking ensign whom Dahl had never seen before. The ensign had undoubtedly noted the presence of the three senior officers on the away team and calculated his own odds of survival and didn't like the result. Dahl smiled at the ensign as he sat down. The ensign looked away. Several minutes later, with Kerensky at the controls, the shuttle was out of its bay and headed toward the Nance. Some of you are late additions to this party, Captain Abernathy said, nodding to Finn and Dahl. So let me review the situation and our plan of attack. The Nance has been out of communication since just before it attacked the Pontifex's ship. We think the Calendrian rebel spy was somehow able to take over some systems, cut off communications, and fire on the Pontifex. But afterward, the crew must have been able to get back some control of the ship. Otherwise, the Nance would have blown the Pontifex out of the sky by now. Our job is to get onto the Nance, ascertain the situation, and if necessary, assist in the capture of the rebel.
Do we have any information on who this rebel might be, sir? Dahl heard himself ask, surprised to hear the sound of his own voice.
Oh, shit, he thought.
An excellent question, Ensign Dahl, King said. Just before we left the Intrepid, I requested a crew manifest for the Nance. The crew of the ship has been stable for months, but there was a recent addition to its crew, a crewman, Jer Weston. He's a primary person of interest.
Wait, Finn said, interrupting the commander. Did you say Jer Weston?
Yes, King said, irritated at being interrupted.
Previously stationed on the Springfield? Finn asked.
That was his prior posting to the Nance, yes, King said. Why?
I know this guy, Finn said. I knew him on the Springfield.
My God, man! Abernathy said, leaning forward to Finn. Tell us about him!
There's not much to say, Finn said, looking at the captain and then King. He and I worked in the cargo hold together.
He was your friend? Keen asked.
Friend might be a little much, sir, Finn said. Jer's a dick. Friend isn't part of his vocabulary. But I worked with him for more than a year. I spent time with him. He never seemed like a traitor.
If spies seemed like traitors, they wouldn't be good spies, King said.
Finn, we need to know everything you know about Weston, Abernathy said intensely. Anything we can use. Anything that can help us take back control of the Nance before more Calendrian rebel ships converge on this sector. Because if they arrive before the Nance is back in action, the Intrepid won't be enough to keep the Pontifex safe. And then, it won't just be the Calendrians fighting themselves. The whole galaxy will be at war.
There was a long, tense second of silence.
Okay, sir, Finn said eventually. Great, thanks, Abernathy said. His demeanor was suddenly more relaxed.
Wow, a last-minute replacement for this away team, and you just happen to know the crewman we think is the spy? That's amazing. What are the odds of that?
Pretty big odds, Finn said.
I'll say, Abernathy said.
Captain, before crewman Finn briefs us on Weston, I want to discuss the layout of the Nance with you, King said. He and Abernathy fell into a discussion.
Dahl turned to Finn.
You okay? He asked.
I'm fine, Finn said.
You're sure? Dahl said.
Andy quit it, Finn said.
It's a coincidence is all it is.
I'm going to get through this. You are going to get through this. We are going to get back to the Intrepid. We're going to get a drink, and then I'm going to go to medical when Maya wakes up and kicks my ass. That's my prediction. I'll put money on it if you want.
Dahl smiled.
Okay, he said, and sat back.
He looked over at Abernathy and King, still in their conversation. Then he looked over to the other ensign. He was looking at Finn, with an expression that Dahl couldn't quite read. After a moment, it came to him. The other ensign looked relieved. And he looked guilty about it.
Chapter 12. The Nance Bay was empty, except for several automated cargo carts rolling about.
Finn and Dahl, you're with me, Captain Abernathy said, and then pointed at the remaining ensign. Grover, you're with Kerensky and King.
Yes, sir, Ensign Grover said,
and then was flung backward against the shuttle as a pulse beam hit him, fired from one of the automated carts. As he fell, Dahl caught a glimpse of confusion in his eyes. And then Dahl was running, with Finn and Kerensky, looking for cover under fire. They found it several meters away, behind storage bins. Several armed cargo carts were now rolling toward them, with the others heading toward where Kerensky and King had taken cover.
"Anyone have any ideas?" Abernathy asked.
"Those carts are being controlled from a distance," Finn said. "If we can get to the quartermaster's office here in the bay, we can override their signal for the ones in here."
"Yes," Abernathy said, and pointed to a far wall. "If this bay is laid out anything like the Intrepid's, it's over there."
"I can do it," Finn said.
Abernathy held up his hand. "No," he said. "We've already lost one crew member today. I don't want to risk another."
As opposed to risking our captain, Dahl thought, but kept silent. Abernathy raised his pulse gun.
"You two cover me as I run for it. I'm going on three."
He started counting down. Dahl glanced over to Finn, who shrugged and then readied his pulse gun. At the three count, Abernathy burst from behind the storage bins like a startled quail and ran in a broken, diving pattern across the bay. The cargo carts abandoned their previous targets and fired at the captain, narrowly missing him each time. Dahl and Finn aimed and knocked out one cart each. Abernathy made it to the quartermaster's office, blasting the window and jumping through rather than wasting time opening the door. Several seconds later, the cargo carts noisily deactivated.
"All clear," Abernathy said, coming into view and hoisting himself over the remains of the window.
The members of the Intrepid crew reassembled by the fallen corpse of Grover, whose face still had a look of disbelief on it.
"Finn, it looks like your friend Jer Weston is now a murderer," Abernathy said, grimly.
"He's not my friend, sir," Finn said.
"But you do know him," Abernathy said. "If you find him, will you be ready to take him down? Alive?"
"Yes, sir," Finn said.
"Good," Abernathy said.
"Captain, we need to move," King said. "There may be others of these carts. In fact, I'm willing to bet that Weston is using the carts as his own robot army to keep the crew members bottled up."
"Yes, precisely," Abernathy said, and nodded at King. "You and I will make our way to the bridge to see if we can find Captain Bullington, and then assist her in taking back the ship. Kerensky, you take Finn and Dahl here and find Weston. Capture him alive."
"Yes, sir," Kerensky said.
"Good," Abernathy said. "Then let's move."
He and King jogged off toward the bay entrance to wander the crew corridors where they would, no doubt, encounter and fight more armed cargo carts. Finn turned to Kerensky.
"So, what's the plan?" he asked.
"Plan?"
Kerensky said and blinked.
"If there really is a narrative, it's not on him right now," Dahl said about Kerensky.
"Right," Finn said and turned to Dahl. "How about you?"
"You know what I think," Dahl said and motioned to the cargo carts.
"You think Jer's pulling a Jenkins," Finn said, "hiding in the walls."
"Bingo," Dahl said.
"A what?"
Kerensky said. "What are you two talking about?"
Dahl and Finn didn't answer, but instead went about separate tasks, Dahl accessing the ship records, while Finn salvaged from the dead cargo carts. "There," Finn said, holding out his hand after he was done. "3 cart IDs. We're going to have to leave our phones behind so we're not ID'd when we go into the cargo tunnels, and so the armed carts think we're one of them and don't try to kill us."
"Jenkins knew about this trick," Dahl said.
"Yeah, but I took